Good morning, everyone. Am I audible?
Yeah.
Good morning, everyone. We welcome you all to the second day of the SDG4 Seminar 2022. Yesterday, we had different workshops and lectures on the various perspectives of education for emergency. Continuing on the same, our keynote speaker for today from India will share about what is dialogue, the nature of dialogue, and how dialogue can become central to education in all its aspects for us educators. I'm very happy to invite my teacher, Shashidhar Jagdishan, fondly called by everyone as Shash or Shashi, who will give us more insights on this topic from his experience as a teacher. Shashidhar has been working at Center for Learning, a teacher-run school for the last 27 years. The school is based on the educational philosophy of the late Jiddu Krishnamurti. Shashidhar has a PhD in mathematics from Syracuse University and has taught mathematics to students from middle school to undergraduate level. Once again, a warm welcome on behalf of the entire SDG4 team and audience. We look forward to hearing you. Over to you, Shash.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you, Heidi, and thank you, Abhita, for giving me this chance to share notions on dialogue and the philosophy of our school. I'll begin by sharing screen.
Yeah. Yeah, it's visible. Yeah.
Yeah. So the search for shared meaning is as old as humanity itself. Anthropologists talk about the circle of discourse that Native American tribes participated in. And perhaps to this day, many small tribal communities continue to engage in such dialogue. Key elements of such dialogue are that they are non-hierarchical, all participants are respected, and listening and speaking are equally important. One of the most important texts that expound Advaita Vedanta philosophy, a non-dualistic philosophy from India, are the Upanishads. The root meaning of this Sanskrit word is to sit near. The idea being that the teacher and the student would sit together and go into fundamental questions about life and living. All of us are, of course, familiar with the Socratic dialogue and the intent of reaching a state of aporia or puzzlement, where all previously held assumptions are shown to be either wrong or inadequate. This state of puzzlement or not knowing would then lead to understanding. In this presentation, I will be drawing from my experience as a teacher at CFL, where we as a group have been exploring the role of dialogue in education and how best to translate our understanding of the philosophy that animates the school into our daily life and into the curriculum of the school. While many elements of what I mentioned earlier inform our dialogue, at the outset itself, I'd like to acknowledge that our notions of dialogue have been greatly influenced by the physicist David Bohm, and the philosophy of the school by the teachings of the philosopher J. Krishnamurti. In fact, they both have had fascinating dialogues which have been published as books and are now easily available on YouTube. As and when appropriate, I will refer to their work. The title of this talk comes from the following notion of dialogue that David Bohm had. The word dialogue derives from two roots, dia, which means through, and logos, which means the word, or more particularly, the meaning of the word. The image it gives is a river of meaning flowing around and through the participants. Any number of people can engage in dialogue. One can even have a dialogue with oneself. In this presentation, I would like to explore how the flow of meaning can happen in the classroom, in creating a community of learners, and most importantly, in learning about ourselves. At CFL, interactions with students take place in a variety of ways, formal and informal. I'd like to begin to share how dialogue plays a role in formal learning places, and we'll focus on two aspects of learning for which I feel dialogue is relevant: understanding content and the well-being of the learner. The learning session often begins with the teacher asking a question or making a brief presentation, following which there's a free flow of conversation among all of us. Questioning is constantly encouraged, and the role of the teacher as an authority figure is kept light. Meaning is gradually built as this dialogue goes on, with the teacher bringing in knowledge and skill interwoven with the student's thinking process. All this to enable a flow of meaning among the participants. Needless to say, while flow of meaning is a key to our educational philosophy, we use many other pedagogical tools like observation, experimental work, hands-on learning, project-based work, drill, and continuous assessment to make sure that the understanding translates into mastery and retention of knowledge. Strangely, while understanding is the key to the acquisition, transfer, and creation of knowledge, it's a bit of a mystery how exactly insight or the aha moment actually takes place. So it might be worthwhile asking if there's something that can be done to facilitate this. I would like to suggest there are some essential ingredients to the dialogue that make understanding possible. First and foremost, the relationship between the teacher and student is based on affection and mutual respect. I feel it's absolutely necessary that we create an atmosphere of care in the classroom. This cannot happen when we use traditional motivators like fear, competition, reward, and punishment. Not only do they prevent learning, they end up brutalizing the learner. There has to be an atmosphere of listening. I will quote Krishnamurti on this. I do not know if you have ever examined how you listen. It doesn't matter to what, whether to a bird, to the wind in the leaves, to the rushing waters, or how you listen to a dialogue with yourself, to your conversation in various relationships with your intimate friends, your wife or husband. If we try to listen, we find it extraordinarily difficult because we are always projecting our opinions and ideas, our prejudices, our background, our inclinations, our impulses. When they dominate, we hardly listen to what is being said. In that state, there is no value at all. One listens and therefore learns only in a state of attention, a state of silence in which this whole background is in abeyance, is quiet. Then it seems to me it is possible to communicate. There is attention. I'd like to say, while the flow of meaning is very key, more importantly for us is these notions of listening and attention, which inform all aspects of our education and the basis of the whole school. Again, to quote Krishnamurti, when your teacher tells you to pay attention in class, what does he mean? He means that you must not look out of the window, that you must withdraw your attention from everything else and concentrate wholly on what you're supposed to be studying. Or When you're absorbed in a novel, your whole mind is so concentrated on it that for a moment you have lost interest in everything else. This is another form of attention. So in the ordinary sense, paying attention is a narrowing down process, is it not? But I think there's a different kind of attention, a state of mind which is not exclusive, which does not shut out anything. And because there is no resistance, the mind is capable of much greater attention. I'm sure many of you have taught and have had sessions where this flow of meaning has taken place. There's a great sense of satisfaction when this happens. Now, let us turn our attention to the issue of the well-being of the learner. Heidi was sharing with us that it's a key ingredient of primary education in Finland. It would be nice to learn about more about the notion of well-being that is shared among Finnish teachers. I will share our understanding of well-being, actually more about what causes ill-being. Curiously, as the learning process is taking place, simultaneously, there's the creation of a learner. I understand that a key aspect of successful learning is the idea of metacognition. That is an awareness of the very process of learning. I too feel this is absolutely necessary. However, I'm suggesting something slightly different. What I mean is that each one of us feels that there's a learner who is separate from the learning and to whom learning is happening. That is, we are adding layers of information to our sense of self. In a school context, the learner is filled with insecurities, comparisons, inadequacies, or pride, arrogance. These happen in a benign school such as CFL, or indeed most of the schools in Finland. Being child-friendly is not enough to avert all these self-related knots. This concern of ours is not limited to the classroom. We all have a visceral sense of being an individual self to whom life is happening. This self is always separating itself from everything, the world, nature, and even its very own emotions and thoughts. By its very nature, then, the self is divisive, and it's not a big leap to see that when there is division, there's bound to be alienation and conflict. We feel as long as we live life in this manner, there can be no well-being for either the individual or the collective. The one thread of dialogue is to regularly question the reality of the learner. Is there really a learner separate from learning, or is this an illusion? Over the course of this presentation, I will keep revisiting this theme of the divisive self. Moving to creating a learning community, interacting with students in formal learning spaces is only a small part of what we do at CFL. We are a semi-residential community, and this places several demands on all members of the community. We need to share, for example, the philosophy of the school with parents and students. We need to take care of our campus, be responsible for all creatures that we share life with, make sure there's food on the table, care for our bodies and minds intelligently, deal with human interactions with all their complexities and all the many little things that make up our daily life. A further challenge we've taken upon ourselves is that we have to do this without using the standard tools that humans have used to manage societies: fear, comparison, reward, and punishment. We would like to work together in a cooperative manner, being sensitive to each other. After all, a school is a microcosm of society, and we feel what we do at CFL should reflect the society we wish to create and live in. How does one go about doing this? I feel the key to this is the ability to see together. This applies from the mundane chores of daily life to dealing with misdemeanors that could be quite harmful. I'd like to say that seeing together is different from common notions that drive cooperation, like agreeing to disagree, one person, one vote, tolerance to diverse view, and reaching a consensus. All of these somehow retain our individual sense of self, which I pointed out earlier, is fundamentally divisible. The act of seeing together seems to happen when we put aside self-interest, our particular preferences, opinions, beliefs, and conclusions. Once we see something together, then we can act from a sense of shared meaning, and cooperation then becomes effortless. I'd like to spend a few minutes on the idea of shared meaning. I would like to distinguish it from myths, beliefs, and ideologies. Humans have had this incredible capacity to come together over ideas, not just about how to live, but also ideas about what lies beyond death. This coming together is often limited and invariably collapses once the ideas lose their valence. On the other hand, if there's a seeing together that comes with common insight, something not based on ideas and concepts, it will allow us to distinguish the real from the false. It has an inbuilt feature of self-correction. For us, dialogue is the essential tool to think and see together in a questioning and gently skeptical way. In dialogue, we can discover the need to completely set aside our personal conditioning, to die to our own beliefs and formulated experiences, making it possible to see in that unique mirror of relationship the whole truth of what is. Then, if we share in the same spirit of inquiry, intensity, and affection, we may actually find ourselves thinking together, not necessarily agreeing or disagreeing, but seeing, understanding, and thereby sharing as one the same reality. The last section I'd like to go into learning about oneself, which is the most important part of our philosophy. Perhaps at the cost of repeating myself, I'd like to say the starting point of CFL's educational philosophy is that society at large is the result of the relationship among its members. If the members function from a deep sense of division and are driven constantly by the urge for self-protection, then the society we create will reflect this. So we have to begin with ourselves and see if it's possible to live differently. This demands a great humility, vulnerability, and an alertness to our conditioning and its push towards self-centeredness. I'd like to translate it to what happens at CFL, for example. So as Abhita said, CFL is a teacher-run school. It has a flat structure and there's no hierarchy among its teachers. We see dialogue as essential in two ways. If the teacher body is to be truly non-hierarchical, then it's extremely important that there's a flow of meaning among the teachers. Equally important, dialogue is also a space to share our observation about the nature of our conditioning, for us to confront the common consciousness that we share and come upon an intelligence that will inform our actions. In exploring the limitations of our conditioning, perhaps together we'll be able to create a new culture spontaneously and effortlessly in which we can live with sensitivity, insight, and love. Thank you. I'll stop sharing now.